Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey there, in this episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show, you are going to listen to a replay of the Authentic Persuasion training sessions that are live each week. So in this replay, I'm taking that session, having it here so that you can listen to it, take notes, replay it, digest it, and then put these things into action. If you'd like, make sure to set your calendars for Fridays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, so that you can tune in live. If you want to register and sign up for free, make sure to go to jasoncutter.com, and there's a link on there. Or you can email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com as well, and I can get you the information for signing up. All right, hope you have your notepad ready to go. Let's dive into this replay of the Authentic Persuasion training session. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Happy Friday. Today is February 11th, 2022. This is session number 20 of the Authentic Persuasion weekly live training sessions. I'm so glad that you're here. Welcome, whether you're tuning in directly through the Zoom webinar link. If not, you can always register at jasoncutter.com. That way you can join in the conversation, ask questions, be closer to the action. I don't know if it matters too much with everywhere that I'm streaming it, but I always love to have people in the Zoom part. Just feels more intimate. It's fun. Otherwise, I can't tell who's out there. Otherwise, you might be watching this right now via LinkedIn, via Facebook, or on the YouTube channel on the live stream, or maybe you're watching the replay. No matter what, say hi, leave a comment. Let me know that you're here, whether you're in Zoom or any of those platforms. Even if you're watching the replay, say hi. Let me know where you're at. Love to have the interaction. Love to know who's out there, who's watching, and who is working on improving, increasing their selling effectiveness in a way that, you know, feels authentic, feels effective, and in a way that moves you closer and closer to being a sales professional, closing more deals, making more money in a way, again, that feels right for you, that's helping people get to a better place. That's why I do this. My mission is to help over a million people by enabling and encouraging them to be authentic persuaders in their sales role, which will then change the landscape for them and for the world in general. Think about it. We're all consumers. We're all customers. We're all buyers. We're buyers and consumers more than we're salespeople. We were buyers and consumers before we got into sales, and will be long after. And so what would the world be like if you went to a store or you called somebody for help or you spoke to someone about your insurance or wanted to buy a car and you actually got a professional who wanted you to succeed in your best interest in mind? While at the same time creating a win-win environment and a win-win situation, right? So it's not just about being in sales, being an order taker, helping other people and helping them win while you lose as a business and as a sales professional. It's about win-win, right? When you provide service, when you provide value, when you're doing something good for someone else, you should be compensated, right? You should get a fair value in exchange for what you're doing. And that's what I want you to create as well. So welcome. That's why I'm here. My own mission that I have that I like to mention from time to time is that I want to facilitate transformation by enabling, encouraging those light bulb moments where you get some insight, you put it into action and it works, where the underdog is winning at their own game, not the game, not what people think is success, but what that person thinks is success. As a lifelong underdog or identifying that way, that's always where my heart and my actions go. And then it is to help leave people better off than I found them in any way that I can, whether I'm at the grocery store or I'm out and about, I'm in a sales role, I'm coaching, I'm consulting, doesn't matter. I just want to leave people better than I found them in a way that's authentic, not forcing it, not trying too hard, just being me and trying to be the best version I can. So that's why I'm here. Hopefully that's why you're here. Hopefully this resonates with you. I appreciate it. Welcome wherever you're tuning in. Again, make sure that you like this, leave a comment, say hello, Let me know where you're coming from. Any questions that go through this, anything that resonates, leave a comment. Also share this. Let's get more of this content out there and less of the content out there that's pushing people to sell in a certain way or getting them to try this tactic or this strategy or this trick in order to close more deals. I see that from time to time as I'm scrolling through social media. And I just want to do what I can to make that stop. Because that's usually what gets more attention, right? It's the Wolf of Wall Streets. It's the boiler rooms. Those get the attention. That's what people think selling is and what sales success takes is to be like that. And obviously it's not what consumers want. So let's dive into this short recap. First, session 19 was actually from chapter 18 from the book. And now it's a little confusing on my side. I have to have it written down so I remember. But chapter 18 from the book was addressing the cancellation paradox. If you didn't see session 19 or you didn't listen to it, also, I forgot, this is also on the podcast. So if you go into iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud, Google has a podcast, Amazon has a podcast section, Pandora does as well. It's all there. If you go and find the Authentic Persuasion Show, the replays of this are on there by the next week. You can find that as well. So last week was the cancellation paradox. And that I talked about the fact that if you're selling and you're using persuasion and you're helping people move outside of their comfort zone, if you're moving them through the authentic persuasion pathway, from their comfort zone to change, which is on the outside, which is scary and dangerous for many reasons. Check that out from last week. If you're doing that, you're going to trigger people to do something that they didn't necessarily want to do or weren't thinking about doing, but it's still the best for them, right? So you're still using your powers for good and not evil, which is really the key. But when you do that, you're going to have people who want to change their mind, right? It's the people who, you think about it, they say they want to go on a roller coaster. Standing in line, sometimes the line is really long, which is the worst thing to do if you're afraid of roller coasters. So you're in this long line, you're freaking out, you're thinking about it, you're overanalyzing, your friends are telling you, your family are telling you, it's okay, it'll be okay, you'll enjoy this, it'll be fun. Once you get on there, you'll have a good time. You're kind of believing them, kind of scared. And then you get up to where it's about time for you to get on the roller coaster. And they have this thing called the chicken exit, which is the side exit that you can take and then leave before even getting on there, right? And some people just literally get to that line and then they change their mind, right? No amount of convincing is going to get them to move forward, get on the roller coaster. They're out, right? That part of their brain said, nope, that's dangerous. Nope, we're not going to do it. Same thing happens in sales. Is that's like you are like your friends and family helping that person say, this is fun. Like, I've done this. This roller coaster is amazing. You'll really like this based on what you told me. And so I'm going to be there with you through the line. And then you're going to have some people, as soon as they get up there and they see it, they're going to want out, right? And that's okay. That means you're doing your job as a professional, sales professional, using persuasion, moving people outside of it. The opposite of that, and what I see, there's two. One is if you have no cancellations, nobody's trying to back out, no one's wanting a refund, no one's calling with challenges or issues or even trying to cancel or get a refund, then what that means is you're more of an order taker, right? It's just the easy people you're moving for. You could be amazing, but mostly it's order takers. On the other side, it's people with high cancellation rates, high refund rates, high return rates. That means they're pushing too many people and probably not being honest or complete in their sales process. And it's not good, right? It's going to be not okay for the consumer because they're not going to be happy. And then that leads into what I want to talk about today. So what I talked about last week and what I just recapped was if you're good in sales, if you're a persuader, if you're a sales professional, you will have cancellations, right? So on one side, I'm saying that. Now this week, I'm going to say how to avoid buyer's remorse, which is where it's important. So I want you to have people who are changing their mind, right? In the middle of the night, they wake up and go, oh my gosh, did I want to do that? Should I do that? Does this make sense for me? And you're going to have that because it's human nature. Everyone experiences some level of buyer's remorse with most anything they buy that's of any type of value. And the challenge is that value is always relative, right? So say that you buy a watch, right? And this is an example I used in the book. And this is mostly from chapter 20 of the book. If you have Selling with Authentic Persuasion, you can read about this after the session. But imagine you want to buy a watch. It's a $100 watch. For some people, that's a big deal, right? A $100 watch is relative to their income, to their budget. That feels significant. And that's kind of a big deal. They might put some time into buying it. And then when they buy it, they might
doubt it, right? They might have buyer's remorse. They have might have these things that kick in. Even if they're excited about it, they're still like, oh man, that was a lot of money. For other people, $100 is significantly less of a big deal for them. And so they might not have much buyer's remorse. They could buy a $100 watch. I don't really like it. They set it aside. They never think about it again. And it's just a blip on the radar. So one of the things to keep in mind is it's always relative to the individual. You can't just say, well, because I sell Ferraris, if they're not happy, they're going to have some buyer's remorse, right? Some people might not, right? I sell Hondas. Nobody should really regret that because it's not really that expensive, but it's all relative to the customer, not to you and not to your company. So keep that in mind, right? People will have various levels of buyer's remorse based on what that the cost is, what the value is, what the risk felt like, how far they had to go out of their comfort zone to buy that thing, and then also their past experiences. So one of the things to always keep in mind is that you're not always just dealing with the person who you're talking to right now when you're selling. You're talking to that person who has a lifetime, up to that point, their lifetime of experiences. Their own experiences, their own situations, the things they've been through, the positive, the negative, and this is what makes it even messier, is also the experiences they've heard from other people, right? And that will usually, depending on how much influence they let that other person have, whether it's a parent, family member, friend, close acquaintance, could be a teacher, could be a boss, it could be somebody, right? And I think we've all had experiences like this. I know I can think of other people who I've met where it's like, hey, do you want to go get Indian food? And they're like, no, I don't want to get Indian food. I don't like Indian food. Oh, have you ever had it? Well, no, but I had a friend once who went to Indian food and didn't like it and then got sick. And so they, I don't want to do that, right? It's not even firsthand experience of what they like or don't like. It's third hand of another story of somebody else. And you have no idea what actually led to it, right? So that's one of the challenges that happens as well, is that when you're in a sales role, when you're helping someone make a good decision for them, help them safely get up their mountain in some way to avoid pain or achieve a goal or get to a different, better place, you are having to also deal with them, their experiences, their baggage from what they've gone through, as well as other people in their life that have told them stories, right? Maybe they read an article about somebody who got stuck on a roller coaster, going back to that, which I talked about earlier, right? And they saw an article about it. Or they saw a video where people are trapped on a roller coaster and they're hanging upside down for hours waiting for someone to come save them, right? And they make up in their mind, I do not want to go on roller coasters because that happened to those people at that one time in that one place. Fair, not fair, I don't know, but that's what you're up against. So that is the kind of thing that will trigger buyer's remorse at various levels for people. So one of the things you have to realize is why buyer's remorse happens. And I just covered a bunch of things, which is what happens in the past is that will lead to where they're at. You always want to keep in mind that. Now, one of the things is you can't do anything about it. You can't do much for those specific situations, which I'm going to cover after I go through why it happens. I'm going to give you some tips and some ideas on how to prevent it and then how to mitigate it once it does happen, right? So there's some things you can do proactively in your conversations before the sale is consummated. And then you can also do some things after the fact when things, maybe when they hit that buyer's remorse and what you can do. So I'm going to cover those things, but let's talk about why it happens. So one of it is the baggage. One of it is the experiences, one of the things in the past. If they had an experience where they bought a car and it went bad, now you're selling them a car, they're going to come with that, right? Just like when somebody has a bad experience in a relationship, their next relationship, their future relationship, they're going to be on the lookout for those same things that went bad, right? Could be money issues. They were dating someone who just spent lots of money, caused them to be broke, caused a lot of debt. Then they leave that person, they get into a new relationship, and now they're just hypersensitive. They're hyper worried, and they're scared that that's going to happen again. And now this new person gets to handle and be a part of what happened before, right? And so there's some of that that happens. The other reason that buyer's remorse happens is that people are afraid of making a mistake. I talk about this a lot when we cover the authentic persuasion pathway. Again, There's a bunch of those sessions. If you want to know where to start with those, you can always email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com, or wherever you're watching this, you can just put a message in there. And then when I see that, I can reply back and send you a link for where to start with the authentic persuasion pathway. But the biggest key is understanding, again, you're taking someone who's in their comfort zone. You're moving them outside their comfort zone. That requires change. If it didn't require change, they would already buy it. It would already be in their comfort zone. It would already be something they have, own, buy. It's why a lot of people stick with the same brands, right? We're talking about cars. Somebody who's bought Fords, they continue to buy Fords. They feel like the Ford is in their comfort zone and it's not a huge stretch. Maybe buying from the same dealership, maybe buying from the same person. Now that's safely in their comfort zone, right? There's very little change and danger outside of that other than a new model. Some people just buy the same model over and over again. That person literally has a low comfort for change and different things. And so they want to stick to what they know as much as possible. And they just want to continue with that. And so the thing is to realize that you helping them buy something requires change. In our primitive mind, change equals danger. And danger potentially leads to death, and we don't want that. So on an individual basis, change is scary. We don't want to do that, right? Eating at the Indian restaurant, you don't know, you never tried it before, at some level scary. Might seem silly, especially in this day and age, especially if you're watching this, it means you have internet access, which means you have some level of comfort that's really probably meaning that most of your life and most of the world is not that dangerous. Definitely not as dangerous as that part of our mind wants us to think about, right? The part of our mind that thinks that something is out to get us, something is going to jump out of the shadows at any moment, right? When you go around a corner and you see a flash or a shadow, that part of our brain freaks out, right? There's really not much to be afraid of, but our brain is hardwired to look for danger to keep us alive. Fundamentally, it would rather think it sees five lions throughout the day and be wrong, but be safe, then not see the one real lion that's out there and then harm or death happens, right? So that's the thing to keep in mind is our brain is looking at that. The other part in our brain that's really important that drives a lot of the buyer's remorse that occurs is the fact that we're a tribal society. We want to be a part of a group, whatever that is for you. It could be your family unit, be you and your friends, it could be your local community, it could be you at work, whatever that is, right? We don't have to say tribe like all 7 billion humans, but what is that tribe? Who is it that you want to be with, you want to be getting along with, and that part of you, consciously or subconsciously, is afraid of getting kicked out of that tribe, right? Back in the day, not even that long ago, if you mess things up for the tribe, then they would kick you out of the tribe or they would leave you behind as they move on to the next spot, right? As nomads or changing with the seasons. In fact, if you read the book Sapiens, which I think I've mentioned several times here in these sessions, and I do in my training, there's a section in the book where it talks about even tribes as of right now, when he wrote that book, where if somebody is sick or making a lot of noise, they will literally leave them behind, sometimes tying them to a tree so they can't follow them, so that the wild animals or the enemies of that tribe will be attracted to that noise and everyone else is gone, right? That part in our brain is still there. Might sound silly when we're talking about sales, we're talking about business, we're talking about buyer's remorse, but that's what's driving that behavior. When someone wakes up at 2 a.m. in a cold sweat and says, damn it, I shouldn't have bought that. Or did I make a mistake? Or was that the right house to buy? Or is this going to be, you know, the best car? Did I get the right deal? Part of it is not wanting to make a mistake internally, right? And the things that are going to affect survival. And then part of it is, did I make the wrong mistake? Are the kids going to go to the wrong school? And then are we going to look bad? Are they going to put, am I going to set them up for the best life possible? And am I going to fit in with the tribe? And all of these things, right? That's what happens in that moment for most people. It's not so much, I'm worried about my own survival, which is some of it, but it's mostly about, oh man, now I might look bad. I might make a mistake and people will laugh at me, poke fun at me. They ultimately, again, the survival part of our brain says, oh, they might just kick us out of the tribe. Part of this that occurs is that part of it is our own experiences. How many people, and if I were to do this in front of a room and I was on stage, I would ask people to raise their hand. How many people can remember a time or remember the feeling that it was probably like at the time, without a specific example, of a time when you were in school as a kid and you got called on by the teacher or had to go up and make a presentation in front of the class and you messed up and then people laughed at you? Right? Or you said something that was wrong and people laughed at you, or they mocked you, or they laughed at you later on, or they made fun of you, right? Most people can remember that. So I think that's one of the things that leads to why most people do not like public speaking, because they have these experiences as a kid that weren't positive. And they're like, I don't want to do that again. That's like touching a hot stove. That hurt. Why would I do that again? I don't want to do that again at all costs. When we talk about the buyer's remorse, it's that same thing, right? They don't want to be embarrassed. And I think I talked about this last week, but one of the examples, and this is what's fascinating that happens, is let's say I buy a new car and I'm excited. I think this is amazing. I'm so happy. I've been waiting to buy this car. I feel like I got a good deal on it. I'm excited. I'm proud of it. I want to show all my friends this car, right? Maybe my coworkers. And I'm showing everybody, it's great. Everyone seems to be impressed. They like it. I feel good. I feel like I made the right decision. I'm getting that validation, which says you made the right choice, right? And I'm like, okay, good. I wasn't sure, but now I feel validated. I made the right choice. And we all have that friend or that coworker or that family member who says, hey, what did you pay for that? Well, I paid X. And they're like, oh, you paid too much. I had a guy, you could have bought it from him. You should have paid less. I saw online, like they ripped you off. Oh, you signed up for this thing. Oh, you shouldn't have signed up for that. You shouldn't have done the clear coat and the warranty and the whatever, ever, ever, you know, just down the list. And they're basically just pointing out the things they feel in their opinion that you did wrong, which then makes you feel bad about your decision. And I've literally seen this with people where they were excited one moment. They tell that person who basically craps all over their decision, right? Making them feel bad intentionally or unintentionally. And then they no longer want to share that with anyone else. They no longer want to show that car to anyone else. They no longer want to talk about what they did, how they bought it, what they paid. Like they now just want to keep that to themselves because they had that negative experience where they shared it and then someone was negative about it. And so those are the kinds of things that lead to buyer's remorse. If you have had those instances or situations, experiences in the past, then what happens is next time you buy something, you don't want to tell anybody, right? Internally, you're like, I think I made the right decision, but I don't want to tell anybody, because you start to realize there's a lot of negative people in the world that would rather, you know, rain on your parade than support you. And they think they know it all. And then that leads to more buyer's remorse, and or you're just keeping things to yourself. So these are the kind of things that lead to buyer's remorse. But fundamentally, the thing is that somebody makes a change, it's uncomfortable. It has to be, right? Because it's different. It's outside their comfort zone. By definition, it's different. If I'm going to travel to a new city, that's outside of my comfort zone. I've never been there before, right? I've never been to Cleveland. So if I go to Cleveland, that's outside of my comfort zone. As I'm getting on the plane, I could regret it and go, I don't want to do this. Like I'm no longer comfortable with going, and I change my mind and go back, right? Most people wouldn't, but that's what's happening. When someone buys from you, they're triggering that. And keep in mind, it's either they're worried about their own safety and that part of their brain is worried about like the danger side, or they're worried about how it's going to look. Are they going to feel bad? Are they going to make a mistake? And then people are going to make fun of them, ostracize them, kick them out of the tribe of humans, and so on. If you're selling B2B, it adds a layer on top of this, which is that person is now tying their decision-making and potentially buying from you to their job and their status and their ego and their what they see as their role in society or their identity and their source of revenue and income for themselves and or their family. And so what happens is you've got to add that onto it. I say all the time that it's not B2C, it's B2, and not B2B, it's H2H. But even at that level, you've got to understand, like, what is somebody risking? Someone makes a decision to buy your CRM for their company. Like, it's not just them and what might look bad. Now we're adding a whole nother layer, and you really have to account for that. You really have to keep that in mind. And that's where you have to be really good at the parts I'm going to cover here in a little bit as far as mitigating it. Now, hopefully that makes sense. If it does, feel free, you know, say that it does, put something in the comments, you know, and think about how you can apply that. So let's talk about the next step here, which is preventing it. And again, this is where it was kind of a fun experience in my head anyway, when I wrote the book, Selling with Authentic Persuasion, is because in one chapter, I'm saying, you're going to have cancels and you should, because if you're a professional, you're moving people out of their comfort zone. And then the next chapter I'm saying, okay, now here's how to prevent it. I don't actually want you to have cancellations, right? I don't want you to have refunds. I don't want you to have returns. I don't want you to have people who even try to cancel, but it's human nature. So understanding your job is to push people outside of their comfort zone for their own benefit, to help them get what they say they want, right? And you're leading them to that other side. And then at the same time, let's do what we can to not actually have it happen at a significant level. So how do we prevent it? Well, the first part is awareness. Number one thing is you being aware of what happens and how it happens and why it gets here. It's what I've been talking for, let's say about 18 minutes or so of this so far, is being aware of what happens, being aware of why it would happen, and also looking at yourself and thinking, okay, when do I have buyer's remorse? Why does that kick in? When does that kick in? Okay, so I can feel that in myself. Now I'm aware of that in other people. So the first part is the awareness and the empathy and the understanding. Okay, this is what somebody might be going through. That's the first step. The second step is to do what you can in your sales conversations to prevent, address, call out things that you know would lead to the most likely chance of buyer's remorse. Now, if you know that it's a price thing or a contract thing or whatever it is that you're selling, here's what I know and here's what I see a lot. A lot of people in sales under-disclose. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, a lot of people in sales are either they're very short-sighted and they think their job is to just get someone to sign and pay and move across the finish line and then their job is done and they literally don't care and they're on to the next one. Some people in sales, and you know, again, this might sound harsh, but if you've listened or watched any of my stuff, then you know how I call it, which is I call it like it is. Some people in sales are just very weak and they worry that if they disclose everything or they disclose more about the product or service, then the problem is that people will not want to buy. Here's the fundamental thing, okay? Buyer's remorse is going to happen. No product or service is perfect. There is always a trade-off. And I think I talked about this last week, but just to recap that, nothing is perfect. No matter what your company has told you, no matter what it says in the brochure, no matter what Kool-Aid you drank from your team and your manager or your trainer about how amazing it is what you sell and how perfect it is and how it helps everyone in the best way possible, there is always a trade-off. There's always something that you're trading one thing for the other, and nothing is perfect without any downsides. Okay. So maybe, like, for example, used to help people with debt management, consumer credit counseling. Consumer credit counseling, great way to help people avoid bankruptcy and do it through their credit card companies, right? Like Chase will help you with a special program to help you avoid bankruptcy because that's not good for anybody, right? Like that's bad. So they have these programs if you qualify. The one trade-off is you have to close your cards and you have to stop using your credit cards. If you owe Chase $20,000 at 29% and they're putting you in a program to keep you from filing bankruptcy, to help you get that debt paid off and do it in a way over time, like 5 years, they don't want you to keep racking up debt. That makes sense from a business perspective. And if your goal is truly to get out of debt, stop using that credit card or all of your credit cards in general. I've had a lot of people in sales who I've seen or heard, they've been on my team, I've seen other teams with it, where they don't want to mention that. They don't want to talk about that trade-off because they feel like that's a negative thing and they only want to focus on the positives. Now, the thing is that every product or service has a trade-off. If something is amazing and something is powerful, it's going to be expensive, especially if it's high quality, right? Good, fast, and cheap. There's a triangle. You can look it up as a diagram. Good, fast, and cheap. Two out of the three, but never all three. If something is good and fast, it won't be cheap, right? Look at cars. A good fast car is not going to be cheap. A good cheap car is probably not going to be very fast. Think of those like two-seater smart cars, right? Like you're not going to break any speed records or maybe even make it onto the freeway in that thing, but it's good and it's cheap. It's not going to be fast, right? And so the thing is there's always a trade-off. And everything that is being sold, there is a trade-off of one thing over the other, right? You're picking this strength over this one here. Salesforce, example, is a great CRM. It's a great platform. The trade-off is it takes a lot of development work. It is expensive when you customize it out how you want it to go. If you want it to be amazing, but it's powerful. It's effective. It's powerful. You can do anything you want with it, as long as you're willing to invest in the development. And so there's always trade-offs. In sales, what happens is a lot of people are weak or afraid that if they mention any of the trade-offs, any of the potential negatives, that that person's going to change their mind and they're not going to want to move forward. But the problem is that when you don't mention those things, people always know, right? Sometimes when a salesperson is so over the top with the positives and the excitement about how great something is, a lot of us, I'll just speak for myself and a lot of people I've spoken with, is we get into the mode of, okay, what's the catch? What's the catch? What's the trade-off, right? You're telling me how amazing this thing is. Okay, what's the catch, right? Oh, you're telling me I can go on this free vacation with this free hotel and all this stuff is free? What's the catch, right? Some of us just skeptical with experience in the beginning. You might not think, oh, that's great. I can go on a free trip with a free hotel. That's great. All I got to do is sit through this one little meeting about something about real estate. And then I get this whole free vacation. Yeah, that's great, right? Until you've heard about it or you've gone through it. And then you're like, okay, what's the catch? There is no free lunch, as they say. And so a lot of people as consumers over time, they know there is going to be a trade-off. Nothing is so amazing. Now, what happens at times is people end up buying anyway. They don't push. They don't try to find out what the detail is or what the thing is or what the trade-off is. And they just like, or a salesperson says, oh no, everything is great. There's no catch. There's no anything else. Next day, next morning, couple days later, that person wakes up or is looking through something or thinking about it and going, oh man. And then they find the catch, right? Or they realize it, or they think about it and they research it. One of the best ways to prevent it is to be honest and give the right amount of disclosure. Now, I'm not saying you should shoot yourself in the foot by talking about all kinds of negative, terrible stuff, but you want to make sure that person knows they are buying this thing from you with the right amount of information, understanding the positives and negatives. I talk a lot about and use analogies of like doctors, for example. So you might go to a doctor, you have an issue, the diagnosis comes back and the prescription comes back that they need to do surgery. What they're going to tell you is they're going to say, we need to do surgery. Now, in the surgery, here's the chance of the likelihood of going wrong, right? And then there's this percentage chance where it could go wrong. And if it goes wrong, it could lead to X, Y, and Z. And this is the trade-off, right? I think it would be worth it, but obviously you have to understand the risks and the issues. And of course they're a medical professional. They're held to a high standard. They actually took an oath, unlike salespeople, and they're actually there's consequences if they do things against that oath or against the practice that they have as a professional. It's called malpractice. And so that's the difference. And salespeople don't do that. It's why when you watch any TV with ads these days and one of those medication commercials come on, it's like 5 seconds of ad and then it's like 15 seconds of disclosure of all the negatives, right? Because they've gotten in trouble so much that they have to put that out there. I'm not saying you have to go that nuts with it, but everyone knows there's a trade-off for things. So you want to disclose it, right? With my credit card example, hey, here's the program. The one trade-off is that you have to close your credit cards, and then you just explain, which makes sense because they're trying to help you get out of debt. Your goal should be to get out of debt. And so they don't want you to keep racking the credit cards if they're going to help you out with a special program. And then they know, and then they can make that decision instead of being surprised. Because one of the things that causes cancellations, buyer's remorse, and all these other issues is the surprise, is the, I didn't know that was a thing or was a part of thing. And then there's that issue. So one of the biggest things you can do to prevent it is to mention it. Now, when do you mention it? That's going to be different for each person, for each situation, for each sales process. Sometimes you mention it when you're talking about the pros and cons of it, when you're in the hope step, which we covered in the authentic persuasion pathway section that we did of these sessions. In the hope step, you're talking about here's what it can do for you. Here's how I think I can help you. Here's what our company's going to do. Here's how we're going to get you up the mountain, basically. And then here's the trade-offs. So that's one time, which is usually really effective. The other time is right before you're going to finish the deal, or when you're in that zone of like, all right, so I'm going to send you the paperwork. By the way, here's some of the things, or you've signed it before I get you moving forward. Here's some other things I want you to know. I'm a big fan of disclosures. A lot of people in sales I see just gloss over any disclosures, right? I'm thinking about real estate, mortgage, realtors, where it's like they have this pile of disclosures that just keeps getting bigger and bigger. I know from when I was in the mortgage business in 2002, it was very small. And then it's just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger as people basically have screwed up stuff, which then makes laws happen to protect people against the people who screwed stuff up, right? So what happens is all these disclosures, a lot of people I see in those roles are just like flying through them. This one's about this. This one's about this. This one's about this. Kind of like, I don't want you to look at it because if you look at these too close, it's going to freak you out, right? Which then of course leads to issues. People have challenges after the fact, and then that's not good either. And I'm not saying you want to go through those word for word, because if you do that, it's going to scare anybody. Anybody's going to be scared if you go through those disclosures word for word, because they sound terrifying. They're written by attorneys and or the government, and they're absolutely terrifying. That would turn anybody off from doing anything if you went through it word for word. But I think the key is making sure you cover the right amounts, the right amount of information to make sure somebody's aware, make sure in your mind that you know you inform them of everything that is a positive or a trade-off, because you want to make sure you did your job as a professional, like the doctor who would share what the trade-offs are. We're going to do the surgery, but here's what could happen. If the surgery doesn't go well, this, this, or this. If it doesn't go well in the moment, here's what could happen. If it doesn't go well long-term, here's what will happen, X, Y, and Z. 3% of people have this, 5% of people go blind, like whatever it is. I think most people have sat through that kind of meeting or heard that kind of speech from a doctor, which is, here's the pros, here's the cons. I think it's worth it. What do you think? Let's move forward. So that's what you want to do. That one is really important, is make sure you disclose enough where you know that you gave them the information they need to ensure they're making the right decision. Now, will that prevent buyer's remorse? No, but it will help. If someone makes a decision and says, yeah, that's a fair trade-off, that's great moving forward, right? So that's the first step, is disclose. If you're afraid that if you do that, you're not going to close deals, then you really need to assess a couple of things. The first one is you need to assess if you're good enough to be in sales, right? If you are effective at sales. And if you're not sure, then talk to someone, have someone sit in on your meetings, listen to your calls, whatever that looks like, find a coach, find some resources. I have a private group coaching program that's literally designed for situations like this. I'll mention at the end, which you can find more information at jasoncutter.com, but get help. Or maybe sales isn't for you, but it's not going to do any good if you're under disclosing and or you're afraid to say things because you think you'll lose those deals. That's not good either. It's not good for you or the buyers, right? Or the company you work for. So if that's the case, you want to see how you can improve. How can you get better? There's nothing wrong with that. We've all been there where it's like, I don't want to tell that person that because I think they're going to go away. It's usually just because you don't have the knowledge. You don't have the abilities. You don't have the skill to handle that conversation with the confidence needed to move somebody forward. So that's one of the big things, is if you're not disclosing, look at that. If you're not disclosing because you know that it's a big trade-off and it's not worth it, and if somebody knows that, they're going to realize it's not a good product, that's a different thing that you have to address in your head, right? Are you selling a right product? Maybe you need to know more of the positives and you just don't realize it. Maybe you're selling on surface level. I see this all the time. People who are selling on surface level positives because their company gave them some probably half-assed training and some brochures and a deck of a slide deck or like a video to watch, and they think they know, but it's like surface level. And then they know about these trade-offs or there's these negatives, and they don't know enough about the positive values to offset, like clearly offset any trade-offs or negatives. And so they're just afraid of them, right? It's like, oh yeah, this car is great because of this. It's like, no, it's great because of all these other things you just don't know about. And either your company failed you by letting you know, by not letting you know, or you just haven't done enough research or didn't pay enough attention in training and you're just at the surface. Because if you're at the surface, you're going to lose in sales. You have to know more. Not that you have to use more all the time, but you definitely have to know more and know enough in those situations. So those are the big keys with preventing it. Now, wrapping this up, let's talk about mitigating it. Now, what do I mean by mitigating? I mean, when somebody has decided to buy, you've done your job up to this point as a sales professional, and then they come back after the fact, right? The next day they call up and they say, I've been thinking about it and I changed my mind. I want to cancel. Or I've been thinking about it and I have some questions because I'm not sure if this is going to be a good fit and I want to see how I can cancel if I need to. Right? It's that email that you get. And this is always the crusher, the soul crusher of somebody's week, is where somebody walks in on Monday morning, opens their email, and then they've got one or more emails from the weekend where people are trying to cancel or wanting to cancel or have issues with it. Returns, refunds, whatever that looks like, right? So they had a lot of time to think about it over the weekend. They're just making up things in their head. Their mind is spinning. They're talking to other people. They're freaking out. That part of their brain is freaking out. You could have done everything perfectly right, disclosed everything, you know, help them with the perfect solution for them. And then their mind is still going to spin out of control given enough time. It happens to all of us. It's that primal part, right? It's nothing personal, right? It's that in their brain that's trying to keep them safe from harm and ridicule. Those are the big things it's looking for. So what happens is you come in Monday morning and then there's this email or this voicemail and it just crushes you for the week, for the day, because now you're in a hole, right? Now you're losing. Not even are you like starting with a blank slate for the week, you're behind, which is never good. So how do you mitigate it? Mitigating means you sold and now somebody is trying to cancel. Well, the first thing is address it as soon as possible. I see so many salespeople who are like, all right, if I just don't call them back, maybe they'll change their mind, right? If I don't call them back, maybe they'll forget that they wanted to cancel and wanted a refund. And so maybe they'll just go away. Don't do that. Call them back as soon as possible. I know that sucks. I know that's no fun. Call them back as soon as possible and address it head on. Right? Which they will appreciate. The longer you wait, the more they will spin out of control and it will be hard for you to bring them back. Trust me, trust me, trust me, trust me. You want to address it as soon as possible. So that's the first thing. Second thing is have that conversation with them. Find out what they're worried about, right? And one of the big things is you want to tie it in to what you already know about their situation. Okay. So meaning, let's say the credit card debt example that I was using, right? Someone's got $20,000 in credit card debt at 29% and they want to get help with this program to avoid bankruptcy. And then I know that when I'm talking to John and we're enrolling, John says, I need to get rid of my credit card debt. I need to get everything taken care of. And then I need to rebuild my credit so that my family and I can start working on buying a house next year. Cause we want to have another child and our family's growing. And so on, right? So imagine where that story goes. Then John calls me the next day and says, I think we want to cancel. We need to not do this. Like, I don't know if I like the fact of not having credit cards and so on. Then what I would do is have a conversation. Well, John, that makes sense. This happens all the time. Like, and maybe figure out if there's another option with the credit cards and then fundamentally just tie it back in. And I know you're feeling this way, John. It happens all the time. The thing to keep in mind is, like you told me yesterday, is that this is really important for you. This is what you see as the best step to help you and your family move closer to buying a house next year, taking care of the credit card debt that's really messing up your debt to income ratio, and then also allowing you to rebuild your credit, fix your credit, raise your credit score, and then buy a house next year. And you said that was important. And I know this happens. I know, I'm sure you're just in your head, you're just thinking and worrying and like, is this the right thing to do? But we both agreed that that was the right thing to do yesterday when we talked, and this is normal, right? And so have that kind of conversation, but not a, and this is what I see all the time where salespeople do miss the mark, is they make the retention conversation about themselves, about the salesperson, about the company. Like, this is a great program, we'll help you, like, don't worry, you don't need to worry about anything. Like they're just kind of like dismissing somebody's personal issues or fears or buyer's remorse. And then they're also just making it about themselves, which I've talked about so many times in these 20 sessions and on the podcast I'm on, where a lot of people in sales default to thinking their job is to be the hero, and it's not. Your job is to be the guy, They need to be the hero. And in these retention conversations, you have to make it about them, them being the hero of their own situation. And you have to remind them every movie, right? If we think of any kind of hero's journey movie, like we look at, let's say Star Wars, for example, Luke comes across Obi-Wan, then he comes across Yoda, and then Yoda's the guide and taking him there. He's doing well, and then he slips down the mountain and then has an issue, right? And feels like he's in a slump and he needs picking back up again. That's what happens here. This is the moment where you as the guide need to pick them up again and move them forward towards their goal, up their mountain to their better place, right? Not for you, not for the company, not by bribing them and offering them a better deal and saying, well, if you stay with us, I'll give you a month free. No, right? We're not about manipulating and bribing them. This is about how do I remind John about what he wanted, what he said was important. Here's the issue though, is most people in sales don't know it. Most people in sales don't actually take the time and the energy to ask questions, to dig deep enough to find out what somebody actually wants or needs, which then will help them close the deal now and reclose and resell the enrollment, the sale long-term. And so that's one of the biggest things you can do is actually know why they want it, have that information stored. If it's old school on paper, like it used to be, I used to have that on lead sheets. If it's in your CRM, if it's in your database, wherever that is, to be able to remind that person why they made the right decision before, the right decision for them, not for you, why they made the right decision before, and then keeping them on track. That's such a big thing. And again, if you want to read more about this, check out Selling with Authentic Persuasion, Transform from Order Taker to Quota Breaker. This is in chapter 19. If you don't have a copy of the book, email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. I will send you a link where all you have to do is pay for shipping. I will send you a book for free. I'll even sign it. I'm happy to send it to you, but you can read more about that in detail. Now, one final thing. Because I'm on a roll with this. This topic is so important because it affects everybody in sales. There's one final part I want to throw in here that is so vital. So for everyone that's still tuning in, this is a bonus just for you. And if you're watching the replay, obviously welcome as well. But here is the big thing. And this is what a lot of people in sales are afraid to do, but I think is hugely important. This is a game changer for me when I started doing this is, you know, that person is going to hit some buyer's remorse. Everybody does. Doesn't matter what it is. Unless you're selling like a pack of gum and something consumable and small price, people are going to hit some wall where their mind is telling them that maybe they made the wrong decision, right? Where they made a mistake. We all know that. You know that 100% of the time. I promise, if you're selling anything that's a considered purchase where someone had to make a decision and get out of their comfort zone, again, doesn't matter what the price is because it's all relative to somebody's situation and what matters for them, there will be buyer's remorse. A moment. It could be a flash, could be the death of your sale, but it will happen. The biggest thing I found, the biggest thing I suggest, biggest thing you can do to help with that is call that out in advance before you finish the sale, right? Here's what I used to do. Once the sale was done, once the conversation was clearing almost to an end with the enrollment, right? So we've got the payment set up, we've got the contract set up, like everything's done. And I say, hey, here's the deal, John. Here's what I know. One last thing is, here's what I know based on all of my experience going through this and helping people for so long. And then also how I am as a consumer on the other end. The one thing I know is that at some point, you will have a moment where you doubt and think that this wasn't a good idea. It might happen where you wake up in the middle of the night tonight. Maybe you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning in a cold sweat and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I made the right decision. Maybe this is too good to be true. Maybe this is the wrong thing. Maybe this won't help me. Here's the thing that I know, John, is that that will happen. Might happen tomorrow, might happen tonight, might happen next week when you're talking to somebody about it and they ask you some questions you don't know the answer to and you start wondering if you made a mistake. I get that all the time. It happens all the time. So there's two big things. One is as soon as that happens, not 2 a.m. because I'm not going to be here, but as soon as that happens, give me a call. Let me know. Give me a call. Let me know the questions that you have and let me answer that. Sometimes we went through so much stuff that I just need to remind you of the facts, of the things, of why this makes sense. Because you and I both know it makes sense now. It's still going to make sense tomorrow when we talk. And so the big thing is I might just remind you about some things or help you understand parts of it. Happens all the time. So that's the first thing is to call me right away when it happens. Second thing is know I'm not going anywhere. I am here. When you call me, I will be here. You call me in 6 months, I will be here. I've been doing this for a long time, but I know that moment's going to happen. And when you need help, call me or call customer service or whatever it is for your company. So here's what doing that does. And this is why this is so vital and why so few people do it, because they're so worried they're going to trigger something. But here's why it's so important. So you and I both know it's going to happen, right? If I know it's going to happen and I know that John is going to wake up in a cold sweat or talk to someone next week and get questions, if I know it's going to happen and I tell John it's going to happen, then what happens is when it happens, when John wakes up at 3 a.m. in a cold sweat, he's going to go, oh my gosh, did I make the right decision? Then he's going to go, wait, this is what Jason said was going to happen. He told me this was a thing. He told me this was going to happen. He told me that I would feel this way and to call him the next day and it would be okay. When you tell somebody something's going to happen and then it happens, they're like, oh, okay, I can trust them. I believe them, right? The issue is when you don't tell them something's going to happen and it does, then they don't trust you. Right. So the key is you, if you tell somebody what's going to happen, you're going to have this feeling at some moment, call me, I'll answer any questions. And then it happens. That will alleviate a bunch of stuff. And here's the deal maker, right? If you want to go from order taker to deal maker in the biggest way possible, is almost nobody will do that in sales, right? Nobody else is doing that in sales. No one else is saying what I just said in sales, which means it will separate you from most everyone else, which means they won't view you as a salesperson, which the world sees as gross. They will see you as a professional who's trying to help them, which means you're doing it right. And if you're using authentic persuasion, then you're winning even more. So that's it for this. That's it for session 20, talking about buyer's remorse. How do you understand it? Why does it happen? How do you prevent it? How do you mitigate it? And everything that goes into that. So hopefully this was helpful for you. Again, wherever you're watching this as a replay or wherever you're watching it live, please hit the like button. If there is one, there should be a like one. I'm thinking of all the different platforms. Hit the like button, share it. If you found value, if you think other salespeople would get value in this, because let's put more of this out there. Leave a comment, say hello. If you're watching this on YouTube, subscribe. If you're not watching this on YouTube, go to YouTube, search Jason Cutter. You'll find my channel. And then subscribe. I'm putting out a lot of videos, a lot of these training sessions I'm also taking and then making short versions. So if you want like a 5 to 8 to 10 minute clip, sometimes I do like 60 second YouTube shorts on there, just talking about overcoming objections or leaving voicemails, all kinds of short tips, things like that. So make sure to go to YouTube and subscribe. And then lastly, the vision board challenge is still going on. So it's a 4-email series with videos to help you understand why a vision board is important and then how to build one and why you should build one and all of those steps. Super, super valuable. I found that as a way to help people stay focused and disciplined in what they're selling. If you want to take part in that, if you want to sign up, again, it's free emails. There's no call to action. It's really about helping you just do more and focus more, especially in this year, 2022. Go to jasoncutter.com and then look for the Vision Board Challenge link and then sign up there. But that's it for this session. That's it for session 20. And I appreciate you all being here. Thanks for tuning in, and I will catch you next week.
That's it for the replay of the Authentic Persuasion Weekly Live Training Session. Again, make sure to catch them live Fridays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. You can go to jasoncutter.com to sign up so you can get alerts, put it on your calendar, and have the links for when it goes live. And you can always email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com, and I can get you the information to sign up, as well as let me know any questions that you have, topics you want me to cover, or guides that you may be looking for. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.